Is the bubble about to burst for Bitcoin? It lost half its value on Friday. Other cryptocurrencies are dealing in the red, and world markets are in decline. What does that say about the global economy? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I am Hashim Ahlbarra. Bitcoin, the mother of all cryptocurrencies, has lost half its value in just a few hours. It reached an all-time high of more than $65,000 last year. But on Friday, it dropped below $35,000 for the first time in months. And it's not just Bitcoin. Some of the biggest names in the blockchain have been trading in red. Some blame Russia's central bank, which proposed on Friday a ban on the trade and mining of cryptocurrencies. A ban by China last September had a similar effect. But a U.S. Federal Reserve decision to hike interest rates was already having an impact before the Russian announcement. Let's take a quick look at Bitcoin's short history. It was created in 2008 by an unknown person or group of people under the name of Satoshi Nakamoto. It began circulating a year later as an open-source software, which means anyone could access its blueprint and make their own type of coin. The digital currency was intended for people to send money online and avoid the global banking system. But value fluctuated sharply as people experimented on how to use it. Now, Bitcoin can be used to buy anything from property, electric cars, and even drugs and weapons without leaving a trace. Let's bring in our guests in London, Naeem Aslam, Chief Market Analyst at Ava Trade. In Singapore, Zenon Capron, Director of Capron Asia and author of Chomping at the Bitcoin, Past, Present and Future, Bitcoin in China. From Dublin, Professor Brian Lucy, Professor of International Finance and Commodities at Trinity Business School. Welcome to the program. Naeem, do we know exactly what's behind the cryptocurrency fall?
Thanks for having me. There are a number of factors that are adversely influencing the prices. Two of them you've mentioned, but the most important one is the risk of sentiment among investors, which triggered a big sell-off. Now, how the sell-off really happened, that was triggered by the Federal Reserve. And the Federal Reserve started to give more hawkish stance to the market, because last year everyone was anticipating 3 interest rate hikes, and Fed wants to increase interest rate to control inflation. And Bitcoin is a natural hedge to inflation. We know throughout the world, inflation is getting out of control. Mm-hmm. Now the Federal Reserve Bank, which is the central bank in America, wants to control that inflation, wants to reduce the supply of dollar in the system. Hence, we are seeing this little bit of a retreat in the price. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to emphasize one important thing over here.
Sure.
With respect to Bitcoin halving its prices from where they are now, because last year we saw the price action going all the way to 69,000, now 34,000 to 35,000, that's nothing new for this beast. Bitcoin is known for its volatility, especially during the month of January. Over the last 10 years, we have seen plenty of volatility for Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm. Zenon, is it because of the fact that Bitcoins are, or cryptocurrencies are, the best hedge against inflation? The moment reports started to circulate about the Federal Reserve starting to move forward past the COVID decisions, particularly when it comes to stimulus and tackling inflation, there's been a panic reaction in the global stock markets, and by definition, that extended to the cryptocurrency itself. And this explains why they're tumbling.
Yes, I completely agree. I think, Bitcoin is very volatile, obviously, as we know, and the reactions tend to be a lot greater in terms of reacting to market news or sentiment out there. And I think, you know, what we're seeing now is definitely a retreat. But as mentioned, you know, this is nothing new for cryptocurrency, whether that be Bitcoin, Ethereum, or any of the other many altcoins that are out there. Is this volatility is there. It is most likely, you know, on the historical basis, a temporary, setback, you would call it, for Bitcoin. You know, we've seen this in the past where it's lost 40, 50% of its value and then creeped right back up. So it could just be the trend that we've always seen in January and that volatility. But who knows what holds the future for Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm. Brian, but at the same time, when you have the jewel of the cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin, suffering this massive slide, could that be an indication that this is not just one of those old cycles of an all high and then a dive? This could be an indication that there's something completely or intrinsically wrong with the very philosophy of Bitcoins or cryptocurrencies.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with cryptos is like any other asset. Once, you know, a professor or a market analyst says the top is in or the bottom is in, you know, they will be made to look foolish. So is this the start of an irrevocable decline in crypto's value? I don't know. I don't think so. I think cryptocurrencies have a role and will continue to play a role. And therefore, even though there is an argument that they have no fundamental intrinsic value, once people accept them as a form of money, regardless of what they're doing with it, then it will have a value as a form of money. The difficulty, as the other speakers have mentioned, is that the very nature of this beast is such that it is incredibly volatile. And it's exposed to volatility across a very wide range, more so perhaps than other assets. It's exposed to geopolitical volatility. It's exposed to economic volatility. It's exposed to sentiment volatility. It's exposed to regulatory volatility. And all of these are moving in a bit of a perfect storm against crypto and indeed some other assets at the moment. Mm-hmm. In particular, the regulatory one is the one which I think is the biggest bear case, as it were, for cryptos. The very success of cryptocurrencies, showing that there is a market for anonymous digital monetary transactions product, is one that mm-hmm. central banks will not let go past. They will, and they are moving towards central bank digital currencies, which are not crypto. And don't have the main advantage of crypto is that it's not traceable. It can be used, therefore, as you mentioned, for, you know, good or ill, as it were, in terms of purchasing. Central bank digital currencies, to be really effective, would have to require would not be decentralized and would not be anonymous.
Okay,
but there is a market out there. Most retail people won't really care that much. Business might care a little bit more about the central bank having the ability to look into their systems, but, you know, they can do that anyway through regulatory and tax oversight.
All right. Naeem, the decisions by the Russians and the Chinese to ban cryptocurrency transactions, is it justified in a financial world order?
You know, I'm going to answer that question from a slightly different angle. Mm-hmm. If you're a crypto believer and then you are ready to buy Bitcoin at a price of $69,000 per Bitcoin, why would you not buy it at current price, which is more than 50% discount? Regulatory stance has always been tough. We had over 15 different occasions when China sort of announced crypto banning or moving towards that. Now Russia also is doing that. And then even the Republic of Pakistan was also thinking of banning cryptos over there. But I think for traders and for investors, especially Wall Street banks, the most important aspect is, what is the US stance towards cryptos? Mm-hmm. Now, we all know what BlackRock is, the biggest asset management company in the world. BlackRock was the primary dealer and the primary advisor to the US during the 2009 financial crisis, during the COVID crisis. Now, BlackRock is a major stakeholder in a crypto mining firms, i.e. Bitcoin mining. That really sets the narrative where Bitcoin is really going to be going. And in our research and what we believe is that this is the last time, perhaps, we're going to see a retracement where the price will be trading below 50,000. Because the next bull rally, whenever that will happen, no one can predict. And I'd be wrong if I will say that, yes, we know. But that bull run, whenever that will happen, that will take the prices up well above 100,000, in maybe perhaps near 150 to 200.
Okay.
The correction or the plunge is going to bring the prices back to 50 and 60. And at that time, you will call that a crash.
All right.
Zenon, but below 50, it's not going to happen.
Okay. Zenon, the reason why I brought the issue of the clampdown by countries like Russia and China is that weeks ago, the head of the U.S. Of America Securities and Exchange Commission, Gary Gensler, said the following when he was talking about cryptocurrencies. It's a market rife with fraud, scams, and abuse, leaving many people to believe that this could be the beginning of the end of a thriving business.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could say the same thing about any market around the world, whether that be, you know, U.S. stock markets, the U.S. dollar, et cetera. I mean, there's plenty of examples in every market of abuse and fraud and everything else that Gensler was kind of pointing at. So I think it's, you know, pointing at crypto, certainly it's happening more in the crypto space because it's a much newer market. But you know, fundamentally, I think things have gone a bit too far in the U.S. I mean, you have, too far to be stopped at this point. I mean, you have Coinbase as an example. It's a multi-billion dollar company that's listed on the stock exchange. You have many other mining companies that have already been listed or lining up for SPACs or IPOs. So I think, you know, if the government really wanted to move around this and was really anti-crypto, they would have had to done it earlier because I think, you know, putting the genie back in the bottle at this point would be quite difficult for any of the regulators in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Brian, is it fair to say that just the very nature of cryptocurrency, the fact that it's digital, encrypted, based on blockchain, not controlled by any central authority, it is being widely described for a political reason as a threat to the financial stability, and therefore we're seeing those dips?
Yeah, the history of money and the history of money in the United States in particular is littered with private money. And this is what crypto is. And private banks, private money creating banks. And in the 1830s, 1840s, 1850s, we saw these come and go with gleeful abandon. The United States also has in its political DNA, if it chooses to reach into it, a fairly significant history of, if it wants to, and I'm not sure that the present mood is such that it would, clamping down very hard and very fast on extremely large corporations that it deems to be in the consumer and in national and self-interest. The other problem that crypto is exposed to, however, is one that we hinted on earlier on, which is about sentiment. And the reality is that Bitcoin is an incredibly dirty currency. It's a small asset in global terms, and yet it's, you know, the way in which it is produced and mined, whether it's in Turkmenistan or in anywhere else, tends to naturally go towards the cheapest kind of energy production, which at the moment is still typically going to be heavily carbon intensive ways. And Bitcoin uses more electricity than medium sized countries. Mm-hmm. You know, Bitcoin is the Netherlands. Bitcoin is, you know, Mexico. And you know, from a global warming perspective, people get very het up about, you know, clamping down on travel and worrying about whether they should switch to a hybrid. You know, getting rid of crypto, which I'm not advocating, would knock a large chunk of the problem right out the window. Mm-hmm. Now, as anthropogenic global warming continues, as that becomes an existential threat toward countries, that's going to make at very least a switch towards cleaner cryptos. And there are cleaner ways of both mining and using cryptos become a regulatory must, I think.
All right. Now, Naeem, you've listened to what Brian has just been saying. Now, this fallout, is it manageable? Or what do you think cryptocurrency should be doing in the near future to win the hearts and minds of the people and of the regulatory systems all over the world?
Sure. So I just wanted to make some comments. What's been said earlier, fiat currency or fiat money isn't really green at all as well. Look at the amount of paper which has been circulated, ink, and everything which comes with it. Secondly, with respect to the Bitcoin mining, now over 55 to nearly 60% of that money is being actually used, the mining is done through renewable energy. Number three, if you believe in Metaverse, which is the next future, Web 3.0, then this currency is the future. Digital currency is the future. Number four, now actually regulators within Europe, and I'm speaking of Germany, the economic engine of the Eurozone, has allowed hedge funds to have allocation up to 10% in cryptocurrencies. Once the dust will settle and we come out of this particular storm that we are currently facing with respect to Bitcoin, you will see barrage of headlines coming out and mentioning corporates, hedge funds, institutions, family offices buying cryptos at a major discount. It is in their favor what is happening in the media, which is driving the prices lower. But make no mistake, fiat money isn't really that friendly to environmentally friendly as well.
I have to disagree.
Go ahead. Yes, yes, Brian. Go ahead.
First of all, you know, the amount of money, like money in our pockets, as a percentage of global money, is infinitesimally small. So yeah, you're absolutely right that you know, big paperworks and stamping out coins is not particularly environmentally friendly. But the reality is, especially with COVID, you know, we are moving towards a digital environment where money exists only as electrons. Secondly, the amount of transactions and the amount of activity and the size of the entire crypto market is still incredibly small by comparison to the global monetary environment. And therefore, given
I just want to
if you don't mind, let's just give Brian a few seconds to continue.
People say, oh, you know, crypto is just as dirty as gold, but the gold market is several times larger. So on a, you know, per dollar transaction basis, crypto is a dirty currency. Now, what you said about digital currencies is absolutely correct. I think that is where we are going. You know, and I was a central banker for a brief period. You know, I'm not speaking as a central banker anymore. I haven't been for a long time. But central banks and governments will not allow private money. In the end, the very success and the undoubted success of cryptocurrencies and all of the issues you mentioned, such as Metaverse and the, you know, digital natives that, you know, our next generations are, governments will step in and they will create central bank digital currencies, which will then, you know, per force, either by force or by usage, regulate, relegate Bitcoin and others to what it probably really is, which is a speculative asset class rather than an actual monetary asset.
Right. For just for the sake of moving forward, I'll have to pick up from where you, both of you agree, which is basically that digital currency is going to become a reality in the future. Now, Zenon, in the meantime, this is a new speculative investment, and this explains why people are looking forward to see more history and data to be able to see how they can predict in the near future. I mean, to be able to do that, what do we have to implement? Are we talking about regulations, first of all, traceability of the transactions themselves, for this to be adopted by the international institutions?
Well, I think it's really fundamentally, if people believe in it, if it has value to the mass population. I mean, obviously now there's a certain subset of the population, being both retail and institutions, that believe that Bitcoin is worth the $35,000 at the moment, and at one point was worth $60,000. Until your mother, your father, your close family believe in that as well, then we're always going to struggle with this volatility. I mean, that's one of the reasons that, you know, the US dollar is so fungible and everybody accepts it, that it's accepted as a medium of exchange. And so, you know, the volatility around the exchange rate, all the other FX tends to go with the US dollar as a reference point. In terms of traceability, you know, when we look at cryptocurrencies in general, there's some very sophisticated players out there that are able to track pretty much where any of the Bitcoins or any of the other cryptocurrencies have been or are going. You know, the days of this being completely anonymous or even pseudo-anonymous are pretty much gone. Okay. I mean, most of this is is fairly traceable at this point.
Naeem, why is it taking governments so long to cope with this new reality that cryptocurrencies have to become part of the daily financial transactions?
I think it's for governments to react, and historically looking at these particular histories of money and then how many different fiat or currencies existed, it actually takes quite some time for regulators to get a complete handle on this thing. And if you look at, especially in the US, I think the fact that we have companies like Coinbase and a number of other companies being listed on the US exchanges, and then this trend is highly likely to continue, especially when Wall Street giants like Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, Citibank, and all of these banks are actually offering this particular asset class, whether that's a speculative, whether that's considered as a store of a value, it really stems the case for the cryptocurrencies to flourish from here onwards.
Brian, should we? There is another argument, which is basically, why don't we focus this time more on stable coins as a bridge between the somehow stable assets like the dollar and the gold and the cryptocurrencies? And when we build that trust, it would pave the way for cryptocurrency to further thrive in the future and people to build trust with it.
So the problem with stable coins is not all stable coins are stable. There is different kinds of stable coins. The big one we all know about is Tether, and there are, you know, persistent questions about the actual backing for Tether, the way in which Tether operates and its relationship with some of the larger players. This is well documented. There are other crypto stable coins out there that are backed by commodities, and of course we know that there are commodity cycles and super cycles. If you have a cryptocurrency which is fully transparently 100% backed by, euros, it's a problem in search of a solution. Well, why not just use the euros directly instead of going through an intermediary? So I don't think stablecoins are the solution.
Okay.
They may help some people to mitigate the volatility, but they're not the solution to. Why cryptos are not being adopted. The cryptos will be adopted widespread when you can pay your taxes in them. It's not about going to get a coffee.
Okay, Zenon.
We've seen a market experiment where in El Salvador, crypto libertarian fans have said, let people use crypto and, you'll see fiat currencies will be abolished, and they haven't.
All right. Zenon, now when you look at most of the governments, including the US, are thinking about the post-COVID realities in terms of how to tackle inflation and also how to move beyond the stimulus packages, that was translated immediately with this urge by most of the investors to look for new equities. They're more attracted to high-tech companies, and this explains why somehow they are really staying away from risk. And when it comes to risk, this explains why the cryptocurrency is paying the price. What should the cryptocurrency industry itself do to be appealing to the investors?
Well, I think, to a certain extent, the fiscal policy and monetary policy of the U.S. government is outside of the control of everybody besides the U.S. government and the regulators. I think, what we've seen in the crypto industry over the past 2 years has been relatively impressive for two significant areas. First of all, there's a lot more professionals that are getting into it. I mean, here in Singapore, constantly we're hearing of bankers that are working for large financial institutions and shifting over to crypto. So it is professionalizing quite a bit. And that's affecting the second part, which is the solutions that they're bringing to market. I mean, a lot of these are developed by industry professionals who have a very clear idea of what's happening in the market. So I think the sophistication of the platforms that are coming out and the cryptocurrencies that are coming out is quite a bit different than we saw in the last run-up in maybe 2017, 2018. So I think it kind of signals a new market for crypto and a new level of maturity for the industry. But at the same time, it is, as you mentioned, a very high-risk asset. So along with, tech stocks and other asset classes, we've seen them take a beating over the past couple of months as the government in the U.S. has gotten more hawkish, certainly with fiscal and monetary policy.
It will be interesting to see how the cryptocurrency will be able to manage this dramatic slide, Naeem. Aslam and Zenon Capron, Brian, Lucy, I really appreciate your insight and looking forward to talking to you in the near future. And thank you too for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. For further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. For me, Hashim Al-Bara, and the entire team here in Doha. Bye for now.